sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl.
The government and corporate so-called mainstream media are at it again. Just like with 9/11, the government tells us its version of what's happened, which is full of holes and outright lies, and is not supported by any evidence, and the media becomes its echo chamber, no matter what the facts, no matter what the evidence is to the contrary. And as with 9/11, the Iraq War, Libya, Syria, the White Helmets, chemical attacks, and the list goes on, now they are fabricating a whole story around Venezuela. On today's show, we're going to take a look at what the facts are, what the evidence tells us about Venezuela. You can judge for yourself what's really going on and why the U.S. wants regime change there. The first thing to know is that Venezuela has the world's largest oil reserves. Recently, the Venezuelan government has confirmed that it also has the world's largest gold reserves, valued at $100 billion. Those unlucky Venezuelans also have diamonds, uranium deposits, titanium, and coltan, which only seven countries in the world have. And coltan is used in cell phones, computer chips, as well as in electromagnetic instruments for aviation. Without coltan, there are no cell phones. So when you hear the U.S. government officials and the media claim that our interests in Venezuela are for humanitarian reasons, I hope you'll not be gullible enough to believe them. Here's Lee Camp on his TV show Redacted Tonight on the RT station, using humor to explain why we're in Venezuela.
So let's take a second to go over the big three things that seem to really cause the United States to want to overthrow or bring down a foreign government. If you have one of these three things, the U.S. might screw with you. If you have two of these things, the U.S. will definitely screw with you. If you have three of these things, then look behind you right now because the U.S. is currently screwing you. Number one, being a socialist country. That's right. If you don't have the same economic system as us, oh man, we will cut you. All right? Number two, dropping the U.S. dollar. Iraq dropped the dollar. Iran dropped the dollar. Libya dropped the dollar. Pakistan dropped the dollar in trade with China, and the following day, we added them to the list of countries violating religious freedom. All right? I'm not kidding. We do not take kindly to dropping the dollar. But that doesn't apply to Venezuela, no. Venezuela has never... Okay, all right. Venezuela has two out of the big three. But the number three reason we try to bring down other countries is because they have oil or other resources, and Venezuela doesn't have any of those. World's leader in oil reserves? Only the world. That's, I bet Jupiter's moon Europa has more, all right? So, in case anyone was wondering, that is why the U.S. is trying to create a coup in Venezuela right now. It is. And our government is doing it with the support of every mainstream media channel in America, from MSNBC to Fox News to NPR to Bill Maher, all right? Every single one.
And U.S. government actions regarding Venezuela are important. According to Whitney Webb in an article from Mint Press News on January 26, 2019, quote, "What happens in Venezuela going forward will have major consequences for the entire region and the world. And with the U.S. already pushing countries to pick sides, the world may soon become as divided as it was immediately before World War II." But before getting into the present situation, let's go back and look at Venezuela's history a little bit. And here are George Galloway, a British politician, a former member of parliament, and Adam Gary, a geopolitical expert, to tell us a little bit more about this.
I'm George Galloway.
And I'm Adam Gary.
And together we are the History Boys, bringing you the stories, the great events and small that made up the world as it is today. Today, Adam, we can do no other than discuss the dramatic turn of events in Venezuela, where some guy in the street in Caracas has sworn himself in as the president of the republic. And an unseemly scramble is underway to recognize him. Unelected, didn't even stand for election, couldn't even claim to be the disputed victor or loser of an election, never stood in the presidential election, but has declared himself to be the president of the country with the largest oil reserves on the planet.
I'm sure those two things aren't related at all.
Entirely unrelated. Now, at the time of recording, the United States, Canada, and mighty Albania have recognized this new joker as president of Venezuela. But various personalities, Tusk and others, have indicated that the European Union is going to go down the same road. Britain has, as it last did in Cambodia when it continued to recognize Pol Pot, despite Pol Pot having zero claim to controlling the territory, which is supposed to be the British yardstick. We recognize whoever controls a particular piece of territory as the sovereign government there. What's it all about? Where did it come from? And what is the Bolivarian Revolution that Maduro stands for?
Well, the initial Bolivarian Revolution took place in the early 19th century. It was named for Simon Bolivar, a great anti-colonial leader who went against Spain. Now, some of the themes about Bolivar's life have come to haunt subsequent self-professed Bolivarian leaders, insofar as he was trying to achieve independence from his country outside of the Spanish Empire. But in order to do it, he had to rely on not only the peasants, not only the underclass, but also on local oligarchic families who he had to convince would be better off under a Republic of Venezuela than under a kingdom, an empire of Spain. A bit later, almost 100 years later, in 1902 and early 1903, Britain and Germany led a European naval blockade on Venezuela because Venezuela owed debts to various banks in the city of London, in Frankfurt, in Berlin, and other places in Europe. And ironically, very ironically, given what's happened this week in Caracas, it was a Teddy Roosevelt-run United States that said, hold your horses, pull back a bit to Europe. And the reason for this wasn't because of any great altruism, but because one, America, as in the United States, wanted their banks into Venezuela rather than those of the city of London and continental Europe. And then reason number two, America has always wanted to suck Latin America into its orbit.
It's the Monroe Doctrine, isn't it, that the Latin American subcontinent is the United States of America's backyard.
Absolutely. And even though the CIA didn't exist in any way, shape or form when President Monroe made that declaration, oh boy, has it come true in the 20th century and with an especially iron fist after 1945. We've got to remember that throughout Latin America, it was American banks that eventually superseded the European banks and American companies that run roughshod over any semblance of civilian sovereign government. Look at Central America alone, for example. This is where we get the term Banana Republic from, because it was the United Fruit Company that was powerful, 10 times more powerful than the individual supposedly sovereign governments and where the banana plantations were. This includes Nicaragua, Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, Costa Rica, and all of these countries. When the United Fruit Company said, telegrammed Washington and said, there's some leader who has this crazy idea that he wants to tax our revenue, that he wants to regulate our operations, that he wants to make us pay better than semi-slave wages to the workers, you've got to do something about it. And this led to U.S. intervention after U.S. intervention, and this is even before the CIA was invented. By the time we get to the era of the CIA, we get coups in Guatemala sponsored by the CIA, all right-wing military coups against democratic or left-wing governments. So you've got Guatemala 54 in 1953, you had it in Colombia. In 64, you had a huge one in Brazil. You also had one that year in Bolivia. In 1973, you had Uruguay and then the infamous coup in Chile, which substituted Salvador Allende for Augusto Pinochet, the first 9/11, as we talked about on a previous episode. In 1976, you had the United States install the military regime, which Galtieri played a big part in and later went up against Britain in the Falklands. You had America invading Grenada in the early 1980s. You had America involved in the Nicaraguan Civil War in the 1980s, getting Iranian money involved while selling weapons to Iran's enemy, Saddam, on the other side of the earth. You had America involved in the late 70s to early 90s war in El Salvador. And so you see over and over again that just brazenly, if there's someone or something in government in any part of Latin America that someone in Washington or business interests from the U.S. doesn't like, it's really just a phone call away. And what we've seen, though, even by these standards, what we've seen this week in Caracas is extraordinary, because it's literally the United States taking the Charter of the United Nations and every other letter and spirit of international law and putting it in the place where a stray dog does his business, to put it mildly. You have someone who's taken to Twitter saying, "I'm the president," and then you have the US president taking to Twitter saying, "Yes, sir, you are." It's the Twitter coup happening in front of the entire world's eyes.
Usually they wait till the incumbent has been shot dead or has fled or is in jail before their puppet is conjured forth and recognized by the imperium. But in this case, the president is still in the presidency. His army is still loyal to him. Hundreds of thousands of people are on the streets in support of him, but someone else altogether is being addressed as Your Excellency the President. Without even, as I say, the, I suppose, cosmetic possibility that, well, he'd run in an election and it was a dispute over the result or whatever. And just in case you didn't think that the social media giant were at the service of the Imperium, Facebook withdrew the blue tick from President Maduro on the very day of Trump's pronunciamento and gave it to this guy in the street in Caracas. Ditto Twitter. Mm-hmm. They did exactly the same thing. Wikipedia has put up a picture of this guy from the street in Caracas and described him as the president of Venezuela. So you see the whole corporate machinery of the Imperium going into action against a guy, Maduro, who is manifestly still standing. Now, before they drop the bombs, of course, they drop the narrative. And this narrative about the supposed basket case of Venezuela, the bankruptcy of socialism, as if Venezuela was a socialist country, which it isn't. This has been being dropped now for years under Chavez and Maduro. They have softened up. I can only speak for the British public, but I've just been with some people who ought to know better, who imagine that Maduro has been deficient in some way in the economic problems that now beset Venezuela. But in truth, Venezuela is in economic trouble because of American sanctions, sabotage, and the American drive to keep the oil price down, precisely to cause problems for Venezuela, Russia, and Iran. Am I not right?
You're absolutely right, and I want to get into that in a second, but getting to the earlier point of the statements you were making, the history of how media is involved in international relations, this is going to be a very interesting case study, hopefully in a saner world. In the Vietnam War, the film reels, because it was film in those days, that were coming back stateside to be processed, showed a world, a war that was far uglier than the establishment wanted people to imagine. By 1990, the establishment realized that televised images don't always go in their favor, and so the Gulf War of 1990 became very stage managed. It was now live TV, satellite TV, no need for the film reels to be processed. In the Iraq War of 2003, it was much the same. I could say that about 1999 in Yugoslavia, but that was being ignored because Monica Lewinsky was, of course, in the news, while Tony Blair quietly made a speech at the University of Chicago saying that you help people by killing people, this perverse thesis that many just accept as true without questioning the illogic of it. Now, though, we've taken it a step further. The powers that be saw how during the Syria crisis, the power of individuals on social media challenging the official narrative could actually make waves. People saying, hold on, I don't think what you're saying is right. Hold on, someone on the ground has sent me this evidence which contradicts what you've got via satellite from the Holiday Inn or Marriott Hotel in Beirut from someone who's never even set foot in Syria. Getting wise to that, they've realized that you've got to control the social media narrative. And so you had the phenomenon, speaking of this guy, Juan Guaido, the fake president of Venezuela. He had the blue check mark on Twitter, was tweeting images of him swearing himself in as president in the middle of the street. But this is the extraordinary thing. On his Twitter biography, he didn't update his old job. So you now have the phenomenon where someone is being recognized throughout the Western world anyway for a stunt that he pulled without even updating his own biography on Twitter. But getting back to the economy, there's two important things. One, even if you hate someone's economic system, that doesn't give you the right to invade them. Look at Libya. Libya was a rich country when the US invaded Libya. And Venezuela's a country that, of course, could be a lot richer, but it's got the problems of sanctions and artificially low oil price, something that affected many, many presidents in Venezuela, including the right wing, called a Dutch disease, when you don't diversify your export economy away from one generally valuable commodity. That's something that's infected many Venezuelan leaders, both on the right and the left. But in any case, it's as though we're living in a parallel dimension, that people actually have to justify, oh, you don't need to go to war with that country. The interest rates are actually stabilizing. What is this nonsense? You don't invade a country that hasn't invaded you. It's anathema to international law and to ethics.
It's the ultimate war crime. Making aggressive war was adjudged at Nuremberg to be the ultimate crime.
And again, that was the History Boys, former member of British Parliament George Galloway and geopolitical expert Adam Gary, discussing their ideas on Venezuela. It has been lightly edited, but you can find the full version on YouTube under The History Boys, if YouTube hasn't censored it yet. So to recap, Venezuela has oil, gold, and other sought-after resources. And it also dropped the U.S. dollar in October of 2018. And here's a news clip from RT on October 17th, 2018, addressing this.
Moving on to our top story this hour, however, we look to Venezuela, which announced this week it will drop the U.S. dollar in trade transactions. Venezuela's industry minister, Tarek Alassami, made the announcement Tuesday, saying the country will no longer submit to any monetary domination as U.S. intervention.
All transactions in the domestic exchange market will be referenced using the euro and other convertible currencies. We return to the scheme of the euro. The best help they can give the people of Venezuela is that imperialism pulls its murderous and criminal claws out of the country and let us be free. We will not be anyone's colony again.
And if you had any doubt that the U.S. is actually after Venezuelan oil, here's National Security Advisor John Bolton confirming it.
Well, we're in conversation with major American companies now that are either in Venezuela or in the case of Citgo here in the United States. I think we're trying to get to the same end result here. You know, Venezuela is one of the three countries I call the troika of tyranny. It'll make a big difference to the United States economically if we could have American oil companies really invest in and produce the oil capabilities in Venezuela. It'd be good for the people of Venezuela. It'd be good for the people of the United States. We both have a lot at stake here making this come out the right way.
Under President Bush, when we were attacking Iraq, we had the axis of evil, Iraq, Iran, and North Korea. And now, John Bolton just talked about the troika of tyranny. And that troika is Nicaragua, Cuba, and Venezuela. So U.S. aggression is not just aimed at Venezuela. And as you already know, one of the ways that the U.S. government creates regime change in order to install a puppet government under its control is to use economic sanctions. Another way is to create and fund NGOs, but we'll get to that later. Economic sanctions are a form of war with devastating effects on the local people. And here's journalist Abby Martin of Telesur on RT's John Papantonio's program discussing news censorship and sanctions on Venezuela.
U.S. sanctions against Venezuela have intensified under the Trump administration, and these sanctions have not just weakened the country's economy, but they've also deprived millions of viewpoints questioning U.S. policies abroad. As a result of U.S. sanctions against Venezuela, shows like The Empire Files with Abby Martin, a show that's released more than 100 documentaries, interviews, and on-the-ground exposés, has been forced to shut down production completely. We're joined by journalist Abby Martin to get the complete story. Abby, talk about the latest sanctions against Venezuela and why your show has been shut down as a result. I got to wonder, you know, is there more to this story? I can't help but think there is. What's your take?
Yeah, so just some quick background. I mean, even though the Bush administration was instrumental in that coup against Hugo Chavez in 2002, where they kidnapped him and shut down Telesur, sanctions weren't actually implemented against Venezuela until the Obama administration in 2015. Oddly enough, a country with the largest oil reserves in the world was randomly declared a unique national security threat from Obama. But Telesur was still able to function under those sanctions. It wasn't until the Trump administration, which really, really narrowed its focus on reinstalling hegemony in the region of Latin America that kind of got out of control during the Bush and subsequently Obama administration, that he really implemented draconian sanctions. And he kept escalating these sanctions, Pap, until the latest round completely seized Telesur's ability to function. And this was right after the democratic re-election of Maduro in this landslide victory. And the U.S. penalized the Venezuelan people for the punishment of voting and electing the wrong candidate, according to the U.S. So what those sanctions have done is exactly as they are intended to do. They hurt the most vulnerable and poor people of any designated country. And so what we're seeing in Venezuela is, of course, the poorest of the people are not able to get food and medicine access. And of course, that reason is used to exacerbate even more sanctions. But unfortunately, one giant collateral damage of the latest round of sanctions is to completely seize all operations of Telesur. So all contract journalists for the last 6 months have been unable to receive funds all around the world. And even though Telesur is funded by actually five Latin American countries, all of those countries' ability to transfer funds in and out through Caracas have also been completely halted, Pap. So we're left kind of wondering what's next here, and if this is some sort of a larger operation going along with the whole online censorship coordination with these tech giants and the U.S. government here.
So many foreign organizations simply trying to tell stories that corporate media in the United States can't tell. They can't tell the stories because their advertisers forbid them from doing that. You got a guy like Andy Lack, who I call Andy Lackey, up there, for example, with NBC. Whenever an advertiser calls in and says, you know what, we really don't like that story you said you told about the government. We don't like that story you said about that you told about this manufacturer, this corporate entity, or Wall Street. Andy Lack and Phil Griffin, as you know, are the first ones to shut the story down. That's not just MSNBC, it's CNN, ABC, CBS, you name it. All of a sudden, we have other alternatives that people can go to and hear stories like you told. There's got to be some connection here. I mean, I would hope that we could better understand what's actually going on in that regard.
There's a reason why people like you, people like me, are work for outlets like RT, like Telesur, because there's very little places, virtually no places, obviously, in the corporate media apparatus, that you can tell the truth to challenge corporate tyranny and this U.S. imperialist narrative of constant regime change all around the world. We're told who our enemies and our allies are, cartoonishly by the corporate media. So that's why I'm with Telesur, and I'm very proud to be with Telesur. And Telesur was actually created as a joint project between Hugo Chavez and Fidel Castro to challenge that corporate media hegemony that was basically confronting their countries and trying to install regime change in them over a decade ago. And Telesur has actually been a constant source of attacks and threats from the U.S.-backed opposition in Venezuela over the last decade plus. There was even a coup plot that involved bombing the headquarters of Telesur back in 2015. That was foiled. So yes, I think that, you know, days after this assassination attempt of Maduro that was actually turned out to be linked to Miami and Bogota, evidently, days after that, you saw Venezuela Analysis, which is an independent alternative outlet that has nothing to do with the state, being shut down by Facebook arbitrarily. You saw Telesur being shut down by Facebook arbitrarily, reinstated later, but for bizarre, ambiguous reasons. And this is after the sensitive content bans, the age restrictions already on Telesur's videos and our videos. So, Pap, I think that this is part and parcel with this larger operation of these tech giants working hand in glove with CIA-stacked think tanks like the Atlantic Council that are literally curating our reality and trying to paint anything that challenges this establishment narrative as conspiracy theories, as disinformation, as Russian trolls. The methodology is a black box algorithm that we can't actually determine what is actually going on. How are these people determining what can be backpaged on Google? Why these algorithms restrict leftist content? So it's a very dangerous and slippery slope that we're on. And I just think it's time that, you know, we take a step back and actually fund the journalists that we want to see and want to support. Unfortunately, that's the state that we're in with this abysmal media consolidation in the U.S.
And here's Lee Camp again on his show, Redacted Tonight, discussing CNN's coverage of the sanctions.
But CNN wasn't done.
In the capital, there's a queue for everything, everywhere. Hunger breeds a special kind of anger.
We have devastating sanctions on them! We're helping create that hunger! This isn't to say Maduro has done an awesome job, but whether he has or not, we're not fucking helping, all right? Saying we must sanction them to help them is like if somebody, like, fell through a plate glass window and he's bleeding and you go, let's help him. Let's start cutting out the glass with this rusty flathead screwdriver. But that's what our sanctions are designed to do. They're designed to hurt poor and average people the most. Back when Rex Tillerson was Secretary of State, he publicly said we could tell our sanctions on North Korea were working great because poor fishermen were washing up on the beaches starved to death. Yay! Yeah. We saved them by starving their poor people.
There's a national march on Washington on March 16th called Hands Off Venezuela. It starts at noon in front of the White House. And you can learn more about that event at the website popularresistance.org. And that's a great site for a lot of information. So popularresistance.org. And I'll end the show today with these sentiments from journalist Abby Martin.
Going to Venezuela firsthand made me realize how much the media is lying to us about the reality on the ground. The U.S. government and its propaganda arms say it's a dictatorship where mass famine and civil unrest demands U.S. intervention. They deliberately don't tell you key facts. An economic war being waged inside by private businesses and outside of the country by crushing U.S. sanctions. Trump's sanctions have debilitated the Venezuelan economy, costing them $6 billion just in the last year. And sanctions do exactly as they're intended to do, by hitting the poor and working class people the hardest. Their strategy is to starve the people into submission, then cynically use that humanitarian crisis as the premise for more intervention. They say that millions of people are demanding the ouster of Maduro. What they deliberately don't show you are the millions who support Maduro, who voted for him, who are also in the streets protesting this criminal coup attempt. They say that a coup is democracy, that Guaido is restoring the Constitution by declaring himself president in a country that just held a presidential election last year. We've seen this propaganda playbook before, from Latin America to the Middle East, and it's literally being led by the same war criminals. John Bolton, who lied us into war with Iraq, Elliot Abrams, who facilitated a genocide in Guatemala. 1 million Iraqis died for a war based on lies, paved by the so-called free press. They're doing it again. All progressives and anti-interventionists have to stand in solidarity with our brothers and sisters in Venezuela to defend their sovereignty and let them decide their own future, free from U.S. sanctions and intervention. We must call this what it is, an illegal coup underway by the bloodthirsty Trump regime to overthrow one of the last remaining independent nations in Latin America and plunder their oil. Trump has already threatened military intervention. Millions of lives are at stake. We need your voice now to speak up and speak out against another U.S. war for oil. Hands off Venezuela.